Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
April is Exodus month at Real Science Radio. Fred, we're into this series, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Oh, it's the list of evidence for the Exodus, and we teased the last show with the gnomes of Egypt.
Yeah, that's right. Gnome. What are the gnomes? Those little weird creature statues that you put in your lawn?
I didn't say gnome.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, these gnomes were regional powers throughout Upper and Lower Egypt. And Upper Egypt was just further south where the Nile River drained, the headwaters of the Nile. And then it's the longest river in the world, 4,000 miles long. And so Upper River in the south, then the river ran downhill as water tends to do, and into Lower Egypt, and then through the Nile Delta, which is where Goshen was, where the Israelites settled, and then into the Mediterranean.
Yeah, so these gnomes, they had a serious amount of power. It's not like just a regional governor or anything like that.
And there were 20 of them, 20 in Upper Egypt, about, and 20 in Lower Egypt. And what's interesting about them is overnight, they disappeared.
Overnight,
so,
How they lost their power just like that.
Yeah, and secular Egyptologists give no good reason why all these gnomes, it would be like if you're writing the history of America in 4,000 years and suddenly all 50 states disappear and it's just America and they're no longer 50 states.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that'd be very sick. So why? What happened to cause that? Well, the secular archaeologists don't have an answer, but I think there's one in the Bible.
There sure is. From Genesis 47, then Joseph bought all of the land of Egypt for Pharaoh because the famine was severe upon them. So the land became Pharaoh's.
Wow.
The land became Pharaoh's because of that, you know, huge, severe drought.
Yes.
So obviously
for
they they had to give up their power because of all the power that the Pharaoh now had because of all the 7 years of saving
up. Storing up the grain, building cities for storing, storehouses of Pharaoh. Fred, the secular archaeologists refuse, typically, they refuse even to consider these kinds of parallels with the Exodus because of their bias against the Bible and the historicity of the Bible. To many, that's their number one commitment. To many archaeologists, Egyptologists, the most important thing is not the exact reading of an inscription on some Pharaoh's tomb. No, the most important thing is that the Bible is not God's word. The Bible is not real history.
Yeah, which is a consistent theme, not just with the Egyptologists, but with, you know, people in general, scientists that are
evolutionists,
atheists,
cosmologists.
Yeah. People who hate the Bible, regardless of their discipline, they're going to twist their belief to try to find a way to make the Bible not true.
So it's the rebellion against God that motivates so many. And in this case, you might ask, well, somebody who's heard part one and part two, this is now the third part in this series, RSR's list of evidence for the Exodus. There's so much evidence left behind for what you would expect to find if the Israelites located in Egypt and then thrived there, then became slaves. Eventually, the plagues and the sudden departure of these hundreds of thousands of Hebrews from Egypt and then into the wilderness. But because of the bias of the secular scholars, they're satisfied with a kind of circular reasoning that was so well portrayed in that film by Tim Mahoney we've been talking about, Patterns of Evidence, the Exodus.
Yeah, a great DVD, again, that we have in our store. I highly encourage you to get it. It's a great documentary. Oh, by the way, to get to the store, go to rsr.org and click on the store, and you can buy the DVD.
Patterns.
And here's a quote from Patterns from Tim Mahoney. Ramses was Egypt's greatest builder king. If experts say there's no evidence during the time of Ramses, why do they think that he's the Pharaoh of the Exodus?
That's just great. And the reason is because looking in the wrong century for the evidence for the Exodus guarantees you're not going to find any.
Yeah, exactly.
And that confirms their bias.
They like to look in the wrong century.
Yeah. So this entire list of evidence for the Exodus could just be dismissed.
Yep.
Because the Exodus, which we all agree never occurred in the 13th century BC.
That's right. It did not occur in the 13th century. We agree with that.
It's hysterical.
The Exodus didn't occur in the 13th century, but it did occur much earlier. So the next bullet item, Bob, is completely related, and it's the time when Egypt's wealth suddenly consolidated.
Yeah, I like this guy, Dr. Bryant Wood. In fact, he and I have emailed back and forth just in the last week or so. Fred, he is like a number of the scholars who support the historicity of the Bible and that the Exodus actually occurred as recorded by Moses and affirmed by Jesus Christ and the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Bryant Wood is an archaeologist who has his PhD in Syro-Palestinian archaeology. He was awarded a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and a grant from the National Science Foundation, and he used these grants to supervise a dig at a pretty famous tell. I don't know that I could pronounce the tell, Maskuta, in Egypt, but I think people might know where he was working.
So he was working at Pithom, which check Exodus 1, and you'll see Pithom
and
Ramses mentioned there.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool, and Dr. Wood not only holds to a biblical date for the Exodus, in other words, not that super late date when there's no evidence for the Exodus, but he also points out that Joseph's economic policies, this is the Joseph of the Bible, they account for Pharaoh's concentration of wealth and power that happened uniquely at this point in history. So it's yet another piece of evidence that's consistent with Moses.
And you've interviewed Dr. Bryant Wood on the show. In fact, he had some great work on Jericho. Fantastic work. He's a pottery expert.
Yes. And the pottery really looms large when you look at Jericho.
Oh, it does, because Kathleen Kenyon dated it wrong because she didn't know her pottery.
Well, I don't know if she didn't know, but Fred, she excavated such a little portion of Jericho, and she excavated where the servants lived.
That's right.
And so the kind of pottery she said didn't exist, which is why Jericho didn't fall in the time of Joshua. Yeah. There's plenty of it there in Jericho if you just continue the excavation.
Continue to dig and find the right kind of pottery.
So that interview and the information there on our website, rsr.org/Jericho, with Dr. Bryant Wood, just tremendous.
Yep. So this next bullet item is the population explosion at Avaris, a city we've already discussed earlier.
This is the city of the Hebrews in Goshen, which is part of that Nile Delta. So, Fred, in the early second millennium BC, the Nile Delta region was this virgin land settled by the Semites, who by now we realize they're the Hebrews.
Yes.
In a handful of houses, but yet in just a few generations, their numbers explode to where, as we've said, Avaris becomes one of the largest cities of the ancient world.
This is what the archaeological dig is showing, and we can go read about it in Exodus 1, where it says, "But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them." It's like God really wants to know that this population exploded.
Yes.
I mean, this is like a 3 or 4 times, it's pretty much repeated.
Yeah, and so we realize because of the census that was taken, that's in the Bible, that hundreds of thousands of Hebrews left Egypt.
Yes.
Hundreds of thousands. And the reason for this sojourn in this foreign land, God told this to Abraham that his descendants would go into this land and stay there for this incredible long time. And I believe the reason, Fred, is because what we think of today as the Middle East, it's the land of Canaan, the promised land. It today is so hostile. And if you go back in history, it wasn't better. It was a horrific place to live.
Yes.
And so with all these pagan nations around a fledgling tribe of Israelites, of Hebrews, they would be wiped out. So every season when in the springtime the kings would go to war, God would have to do miracles for hundreds of years to keep his people from being annihilated. So instead of having to do miracles on demand, and plus, you know, God's people tend to annoy him because we're human beings and we're messed up. And so instead of God having to perform miracles on demand for centuries, he arranged for them to go into an empire and be protected there for generations so that their population could become large enough to where they actually are a nation in their own right. So it was a nation within a nation.
Yeah, and what a great point. What a great point. And, you know, things don't change under the sun. You can go throughout history. Look at today. I mean, whenever there's a UN resolution, it's always written against Israel. It's amazing.
Yeah, it truly is. The world hates the Jews for the most part. And I think it's because they are called God's chosen people. And so to the extent that anybody knows the history of the world or the Bible, if you're in rebellion against God, you're just going to naturally hate the Jews.
That's right.
And so that describes much of history.
So, Bob, this next is a detail that I really like. The building materials include bricks made with straw. So I'm sure many Bible students recognize that.
Yeah. And so we point out in our list, which is online at rsr.org/Exodus. Real easy to find. Each of these are separate bullet items. They're separate pieces of evidence. And some of them are marked with the word details because it's not like it's a really huge proof, but it's just yet another detail in the Bible that fits with what the archaeologists know. And so the Bible speaks of the bricks made with straw. And sure enough, it's widespread in Israel. Building materials included bricks made with straw.
So, Bob, this next one, you know, earlier we talked about avarice, population explosion.
Yeah, that's
well, now, suddenly, in the archaeological record, avarice becomes as poor as slaves.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because they lived under the protection of the crown, the king. They were relatively well off, middle class foreigners. I mean, their leader or the head guy had a palace, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, Joseph.
Joseph, who's buried with the pyramid tomb. And so how is it that the Egyptologists could know that the population became poor? Well, it turns out that you could x-ray the bones that they dig up in the cemeteries.
Yeah.
And of course, over all these centuries, there's hundreds or thousands of bodies at different locations that scientists could learn a lot about. And you don't even have to x-ray them. In fact, you could break the bones. And if you look at a cross-section, there are lines called Harris lines that show distress, like from malnutrition. And so at a certain point, the graves in avarice show this crisis among the population.
And especially among the young people, which we'll talk about a little bit here because it's the next bullet item. But let's go back to Exodus 1 that says, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, 'Look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens.' So the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar, in brick."
Yeah. So we can understand why this middle class or upper middle class population in avarice of Hebrews, why they're suddenly dying of malnutrition.
Yeah. And so the next bullet item mentioned earlier is avarice being filled with the bodies of infants and younger people in the later graves.
Wow. So in other words, not in the early generations of avarice, but later.
Towards the end.
When they look at the graves, which is such an incredible source of information about the past.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Iceman.
And bells have to be ringing in the Bible students' ears, right? Because all of a sudden, a lot of young people die.
Infants and younger people. So this once prosperous major city now is seeing an epidemic of early death. And early death was common in the ancient world. But we're talking about a dramatic increase in the rate of finding infants and young people buried.
Yeah. "Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Shephra, and the name of the other Pua. And he said, 'When you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live.
Wow.
So they're killing the Hebrew young children. And yes. This is going to be the beginning of Moses, right?
Yeah. So these are basically the leaders of the Hebrew midwives, even though it says that Pharaoh called the Hebrew midwives. He didn't call all of them.
Yeah. He's going to call the leaders.
You wouldn't call 370 women to the palace or however many it was. You call the leaders of the midwives. I mean, they had a sophisticated civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I want you to kill the boys when they're born. So he brings these two women and Fred. They refuse to obey Pharaoh.
Yeah.
They disobey the government and they end up identified in scripture as being blessed by God. We have an article on our website about lying, the people in the Bible that God told them to lie.
Yeah.
And disobeying the governmental authorities. And when God blessed them, like Corrie Ten Boom with the Nazis and, mm-hmm. you know, so many extraordinary Christians.
It would be a sin to tell the truth in certain cases. Oh, I do have a Jew hiding in my basement.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I know you're going to get him and kill him, but I cannot tell a lie. Yeah. Oh, brother.
Yeah.
So at any rate, these two women, they refused to kill these babies. And they lied to Pharaoh because they said, Pharaoh, these Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women who are slow and lazy. They take forever to give birth. But the Hebrew women, as soon as they get it in their mind that they're going to have a child, the child pops right out. So they lied to Pharaoh and God blessed them. But the other midwives, they didn't all lie because they were afraid.
Yeah.
And they did what people around the world do when an evil leader tells you to kill the innocent. They killed the innocent.
They killed the innocent.
Just devastating. And so that's why we see the graves in Avaris filled with the bodies of infants and younger people.
That's right. Now, you've got a really good point here that it's not obvious how you can tell the gender looking at these bones. But there is some evidence that we're going to show later that most of these were indeed males that were killed.
They were males that were killed. That's right. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Fred. And the Egyptologist who has done this work, and he's been there for decades doing field work, Manfred Bitak, we've mentioned him earlier. He points out that the rate of children buried in Avaris, the standard in the ancient world, about 25% infant mortality, just devastating. Well, it skyrocketed to about 50%. And so, and these were children aged 10 and younger, many of whom died in the first 3 months of their lives.
Wow. Yeah. So pretty much doubled.
Yeah. So it's like abortion today, infanticide, you know, partial birth abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Fred, you might recall we produced a 2-minute video called The Worst Abortion Video Yet.
Yeah. It's very distressing.
Yeah. It has about 35,000 views. It's rsr.org.
Horrific.
It's horrific.
Yeah.
It's the worst abortion video yet.
Yep.
It's only 2 minutes long. You go to rsr.org, you click on our YouTube channel, and there it is in our personhood pro-life playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it has over 35,000 views, so it's reached a lot of people. And what's especially important is the message at the end of the 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So important. If people are hearing this and they're reminded of the atrocity committed by the Egyptians against these innocent children, well, that atrocity, that's going on today.
Yeah.
In Planned Parenthoods and other abortion mills, really right down the street from most of our listeners.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things I hate to encourage you to do, but I do encourage people to watch that. Mm. And you can help out by giving to like AmericanRightToLife.org.
Oh, yeah.
And this really helped this effort. And I thank you, Bob, for all you're doing for it. I mean, I know you're doing a ton. And you also have that fantastic video, Focus on the Strategy. If we could just do that and do this right and get rid of this scourge on our societies. Yeah.
And
horrible.
Fred, by the way, this morning, I happened to be at the local abortion mill, Planned Parenthood, and we had a meeting, and we have an event coming up called Frontlines at a local Denver area high school the first week in May. It's coming right up Monday through Friday, and we will be there in the morning when the kids are arriving at school giving out literature. I mean, incredible literature, the kind of thing that looks like a high school kid would want to read.
Yeah.
The headline is, You've Been Lied To. And it's so powerful. And we tell these students, we've done this before, when you come out of school this afternoon, we'll be back. And we go there Monday through Friday, all 5 days, morning and afternoon. Lord willing, we'll be able to reach a lot of kids, tell them about the Lord, that God made you. You haven't descended from slime.
Mm-hmm.
You're not an animal. And it's wrong to kill the innocent, and therefore it's wrong to kill a child in the womb made in the image and likeness of God.
So how can people help with this? If they can't show up, is there other ways they can help?
Well, sure. For one, the best is if you live in Colorado, get here to Denver that week, for at least the day, morning or afternoon.
That's ideal.
Yeah. If you can't, please call Colorado Right to Life. Now, they're not running this. The organizer of this event is a guy named Dominic Enyart.
Okay.
So Dominic has done this in the past with others, and now he thinks, hey, you know, I'm 16 years old. Why can't I run an event?
Wow. Neat.
And so he organized this, picked the location, had meetings, but it cost a lot of money. The literature we're handing out, each piece cost about $1. And so when you want to hand out 400 or 500 pieces of literature to a huge high school, it gets expensive.
Yep.
And so Dominic put in $100 of his own money.
Wow.
But if anybody wants to help with this project, call Colorado Right to Life. Just go to coloradortl.org, make a donation, and they will earmark it for Frontlines. Or you can call us here at Bob Enyart Live, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Last thing, Fred, the 50th anniversary of decriminalized child killing in Colorado is coming right up April 25th. Because in 1967, 50 years ago, Colorado was the second state to decriminalize child killing in the modern era. The one before that was the previous year, Mississippi, for if a woman was raped, then they say you can kill the baby.
Yep.
So
kill the baby for the sin of the father.
Right. And God explicitly in the Bible says, do not put to death the child for the crime of the father.
That's right.
Do not. And that's what so many, even Christians, support.
Oh,
it's just horrific.
It is. It's really sad. So, Bob, we mentioned this earlier. The next bullet point is that more females than males survived this period. So we have really extraordinary evidence for this.
Well, how could that be? Because we pointed out that it's hard to tell the gender, right, of an infant's bones, at least certainly for archaeologists.
Yeah.
It's really hard to tell.
The evidence doesn't come from that.
Well, the extraordinary death rate of children that we just talked about, you know, it could have been due to an epidemic that killed boys and girls alike.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out in this data coming from the field,
from the secular archaeologists.
Yes. Those who survived to be buried later in life were disproportionately female.
Yeah. 60 to 40%.
Yeah. So 60% of people who died later then are women.
And the numbers are so large, it's statistically impossible for this to be like a fluke.
Just right. Exactly. And remember that the Bible tells us that many years passed during the time of Pharaoh's genocide against the Hebrews.
So, Bob, this next evidence just adds to this, and it comes from an ancient Egyptian document of this same period that lists 70 names of Semitic slaves.
Yeah, it's called the Brooklyn Papyrus because of where it's housed in a museum, and it's an ancient Egyptian document. So, Fred, a lot of what we've covered so far are things like artifacts you dig up out of the ground and bones and the foundations of buildings that have crumbled. But when you get documents, that's a totally different kind of evidence. It's so powerful because language communicates so much more than a spearhead or than a jar handle typically.
Yeah.
So this papyrus, this document, has the names of about 100 servants. Like you said, 70 of them are Semitic names.
Are clearly, clearly Semitic names.
Hebrew.
Hebrew. And you've got a link to this list.
Yeah, people could read the whole list, and some of the names come right out of the Bible.
Yeah, for example, Issachar and Asher, and then, of course, we mentioned earlier the midwife, Sapphira.
Right. She's mentioned in Exodus directly. And then these are the names of Joseph's brothers, you know, two of the 12 tribes of Israel.
Yeah.
So these Semitic names of slaves, they're Hebrew names. And so that is just powerful evidence. And this papyrus is not from the 19th dynasty, way later in the century.
Yeah, because we agree that there's no evidence for the Exodus in that century.
Right. This is not from 1270 BC, when the Exodus did not occur, when all the skeptics, they say, well, the Exodus that did not occur didn't occur at 1270 BC. Right, right. So it's not from that period, and it's not from the time of Ramses II in the New Kingdom, but this is, like all the other evidence we've been talking about, from the Middle Kingdom. It's the time of the 13th dynasty. And so, Fred, the evidence just keeps adding up.
It keeps adding up, and we're just going to keep piling on. So this one adds to this even further because the names of these slaves were primarily female.
Wow. Women, which is then consistent with the evidence from the graves at Avaris. And remember, we keep talking about Avaris because that's the Semitic city that's been excavated the most thoroughly. But we had a professor, John Bimson, that we talked about earlier, an Egyptologist who said, really, we know of about 20 of these Semitic cities there in Goshen, in the Nile Delta. But this one has been excavated extensively. But the others, who knows how much evidence is lying in the ground? So it's not just one city that were the Hebrews. It was the entire region. And so here we have the names of these slaves are mostly female slaves. Now, Fred, there's archaeologists like Norma Franklin and others that are so well known, and they look at these slave names and they say, well, they're Hebrew, they're mostly women, but that can't have anything to do with the Exodus because the Exodus, which didn't happen in the 1200s BC.
It's amazing what they do. The calisthenics they do to get around this. The evidence is so overwhelming.
Yes.
So, Bob, the next one is the uniqueness of this rapid expanse of Egypt's Semitic population.
Yes. Yeah, so what happened here, it's not like this happened half a dozen times, 10 times throughout Egypt's history. Egypt was the land of the Egyptians. And later in their history, there was a genetic mixture within Egypt. But at the biblical time, the biblical date for the arrival of the Hebrews in Egypt and then the explosion of their population, that's when archaeology shows this explosion of these Semites, enormous population growth throughout the region. This happened in the land of Goshen in the Nile Delta, and then the sudden plummeting into poverty. And so this kind of evidence fills the work of Tim Mahoney in his film, Patterns of Evidence, that, again, we strongly urge you get and watch. We sell it, and it helps us stay on the air when people purchase our resources. And so it's such a fun DVD, and then you could share it with someone else. It's real easy to hand somebody a DVD and say, you'll love this, and undoubtedly they will love it.
Yep. So, Bob, this next one should definitely be ringing bells both in the Bible student's head and really just a secular person who knows history.
Yeah.
So here it is. The Semites suddenly departed Avaris and elsewhere. Suddenly.
Yes.
They're out of there.
So this thriving city, it quickly disappears from history. And eventually,
right after they were in this slave state, torment, malnutrition.
Then it's gone. Eventually it's buried, literally. And that's what happened in the Middle East and that entire region in Asia Minor and in North Africa. When a city was built and it was abandoned, then its buildings would fall, like what happened today if you abandon a building for 100 years, 200 years. And because of the sands of time, that expression, they literally get buried. Like the great city of Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, it was buried.
Yeah. Yep.
And the skeptics would say, oh, the Bible's wrong, Jonah's wrong, there's no Nineveh. And then they excavate the whole city. It's just astounding. And so this city disappears, and then another city was built on top of it, which was Ramses.
Yeah, Ramses. And you touched on this earlier, Bob, in a couple shows ago. New York City originated several decades before the city got its name.
Yeah, yeah. And so, right, in 1624, New York City was founded, except it wasn't called New York City until 40 years later.
Yep.
So the Bible has this, what's called an anachronism, because it refers to the city as Ramses, but that was the name of the city later. When Joseph went there and his father Jacob, they built the city Avaris, and then they thrived, and they left Egypt. And then Ramses, the great builder, he did rebuild on top of what was Avaris. Fred, there's another very well-known archaeologist who talks about a town south of Avaris, in fact, 120 miles south, very similar. They found this walled city, this guarded settlement, which supported a large Semitic population, yet with evidence of enslavement. So here they're slaves and they're walled off from the rest of the area. And it seemed there that the population disappeared overnight also.
Yeah. So there's this Egyptologist, her name's Rosalie David of the University of Manchester. In fact, you've got a picture here on the website. It's really cool. It's her working on a mummy.
Yeah.
So
she's the real deal too.
She is the real deal. And this is what she said. Their goods were found in the streets and houses of Cahoon, exactly where they were left before being buried by the sands of the desert. I mean, overwhelming evidence. They got out of there quick.
They just split. They left.
They took off.
And then the people who lived there, why didn't they go in and take over their homes? You know, when Egypt collapsed, the entire society collapsed, and then the Hebrews were hated. And so it's not like the Egyptians are going to say, well, let's go live in their homes. And they just despised even the recollection of what had happened because of the God of the Hebrews and the God of Abraham. So their cities were left abandoned suddenly and then buried by the sands of time.
That's right. And so this same city, Cahoon, they also discovered there the departing Semites had left behind skeletons of newborns.
Yeah, and this is really sad because they are boxes, wooden boxes, buried beneath the floors of many of the houses of the city of Cahoon.
And these are tiny boxes that fit an infant.
Yeah, right. Sometimes two or three infants in a box.
Yep.
And we mentioned on a previous show that where Abraham came from in Ur of the Chaldees, it was a practice, a custom, that you would bury a loved one who died beneath the floor of your home, which to me is freaky. I just don't like that custom. But here, their infants were killed because Pharaoh ordered them to be killed, and they were buried in these wooden boxes, and then they found them. Even now, here we are, 3,500 years later, an archaeologist like this gal you mentioned, Dr. Rosalie David, excavating, and there they find these wooden boxes of these children. And it reminds me of that verse that you just read, Fred. When you see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him.
Yep. And, you know, just additional evidence here is that these 12th dynasty Semites of Cahoon were slaves.
They were slaves, right. And on Wikipedia, and Wikipedia is Wikipedia, you know.
Yeah.
It has its bias against all things biblical, Jesus, God, right and wrong. The founder of Wikipedia was a pornography purveyor. But Wikipedia itself is quite an amazing resource. Well, we link to it here because they do reference scholarly sources. And here's the quote. Other records show that there were a large number of Semitic slaves in Egypt during the 12th dynasty. It is interesting that some of the villas were constructed of layers of mud brick separated by layers of reed matting, a technique used in Mesopotamia, so north of Egypt. Furthermore, burial beneath the living quarters of a house was a custom noted at Ur of the
Abraham,
Chaldees,
yeah.
Abraham's birthplace where he grew up. And then they go on. It is possible that the workers who were so carefully guarded by the village wall and separated from the overseers by an equally strong wall were Semitic. That is Hebrew.
Yep.
Slaves not trusted by their overseers.
Yeah, interesting.
Wow.
So, Bob, we're out of time. And so maybe a teaser for the next show is we're going to cover the plagues of the Exodus. And by the way, there's also an eyewitness to this thing.
Oh,
you've been reading this guy's account.
Oh.
And I can't wait to get to that. It's amazing.
You know, secular experts, they tell you what Ippawer wrote way back, like 3,500 years ago or so. They tell you what he wrote and that it had nothing to do with the Exodus.
Yes.
Then you read it for yourself. Fred, the major theme of Ippawer is that Egypt has been destroyed by plagues, and yep. the slaves are now wealthy. The slaves have the clothes and the gold.
But that can't be possible, Bob. That can't be so.
Of the wealthy, and the wealthy are now poor.
That never happens.
It's right out of the book of Exodus. And so Ipawer,
you know,
was
historically, that is something that would never happen unless you had divine intervention.
It would never happen, right? Like, say, blacks in America in the 1800s. How are the blacks going to end up with all the riches of the wealthy? I mean, that wasn't going to happen unless there is a supernatural champion.
That's right.
And that's what the Hebrews had.
Yep.
And that's why what is written in the book of Exodus was witnessed by Ipawer as he writes to the king his account of the destruction of Egypt and the aftermath. I can't wait, Fred, till we get to the 10 plagues and then the writing of Ipawer.
That's right. As we continue our series on the list of evidences for the Exodus in the month of April.
All right. Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome. This is Bob Benyar for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.